Lorna Gold and Jim Shear started the Dublin Friday for Future strike just before Christmas, and I joined them in the second week of it, and we've all been there. I think we've done 13 weeks now in total, so there was about 8 of us in the beginning, Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. outside Dáil on Kildare Street, and just like last week we had 80, previous week we had 100, so it's a mixture of people, mostly secondary school students, but last week we had a lot of primary school students as well, and people of all ages, parents and grandparents supporting the students. So these are in solidarity with Greta Thunberg, who's the Swedish teenager who started Fridays for Future in Sweden some months back, and it has turned into this worldwide movement. So the Dublin strike is small but growing, but for example in Belgium 2 weeks ago 70,000 students took to the streets, and sadly it's not reported on a lot. You won't necessarily see it on your 6 o'clock news, but on social media, on Twitter and Facebook, the movement is certainly getting a lot of publicity, and it's amazing to see all these young people out on the streets because they care and they're deeply worried about their future, and the message from them is really clear, saying we haven't caused this mess, ye have, sorted out now, like we're not going to stop until there is serious policy change all across the world in terms of fossil fuels and climate. So it's amazing. It's Greta is, she's like a little prophet. She just says it like it is. She spoke at the COP, she spoke at the World Economic Forum, and she just cuts through the chat and gets right to the heart of the point and says, you know, I want you to panic. Our house is on fire. Why aren't you panicking? And she also called for them to pull the emergency brake immediately. And she's 16. She can see what's happening. So it's fantastic. Yeah, really positive. So everyone's welcome on Fridays to the strike outside the Dáil. Yeah.
Now children are starting to understand it, you know, in a way that adults seem to have not been able to understand it for the last 30, 40 years. Even I've seen papers like published nearly 100 years ago that were hinting at some of these problems, and yet nothing was done, and in fact the problem just kept getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, I suppose when there's billions and trillions of dollars at stake, people are slow to act. But I mean, there's money to be made in a green economy as well. They say that 30 years ago the fossil fuel companies knew the predictions that were that are out there this year about the 1.5, the 2 degrees of warming, that we have to seriously prevent 2 degrees, and best case scenario to strive for 1.5, and that requires an emergency brake being pulled now, and we're nowhere near that. So like for example, Ireland's emissions are rising, they're not going down, but there is money to be made in the green economy from renewables and clean energy, and it you can see it changing and people switching, and I think more of our electricity in Ireland has been generated by wind every year, which is hugely positive. So the solutions are there, we just need the political will now, and for that to happen, people need to start talking to their TDs and say, hey, we care about this and our children's futures and our the future of, you know, the sustainability of the earth supporting human life into the future. Like, that's really what's at stake. And when you say it like that, it sounds crazy.
I mean if somebody said, look, you know, your child has a life debilitating disease and they're going to die in 12 years unless you start cutting down on your meat, you're flying, insulate your house, your fossil fuel use, you know, you'd probably do it because you'd go, God, I'd do anything to keep my child alive for longer than 12 years. And yet we seem sort of oddly complacent about the planet as a whole.
I think there's a lot of cynicism still out there about, oh, is this, you know, really, you know, it's not really that serious, is it? Or there's definitely a block there, but like 97% of scientists in the world are shouting at us, and I don't know why we're not like really listening to these people who are the experts.
Because you'll see debate sometimes, don't you? You know, something comes out, like, you know, after the IPCC report and the Lancet East, you know, then there's people coming out going, oh, you know, we don't really need to cut down red meat that much. And, oh, the IPCC, they've overblown the whole issue and maybe it won't be that bad. It'll be like a soft landing. And
And even our own Taoiseach rubbished the IPCC reports. I mean, that's a very well-respected well-respected body, and I was really disappointed when I saw that. I was in Poland at the time at the COP. There's definitely a cynicism there, and I think the roots of that maybe are, I don't really want to have to make all these changes to my life. It's kind of just You know, lifestyle changes are hard for people, and I get that. But I think it's for all of us, and it's for our future, and it's the right thing to do. It's the ethical thing to do.
I mean, it's also, when you think about it, we either do the hard thing now, or we'll have to do the hard thing in 15, 20 years' time anyway, and we'll have no control.
No. And, you know, I walked with the Filipinos for weeks and weeks and weeks listening to their stories, and just heartbreaking stories, and people from the Pacific Islands who say, you know, us fixing this now and later, it's the difference between us being able to stay on our islands or having to leave. So that's the difference in 1.5 and 2 degrees of warming for them. At 1.5, they can stay in their homes, on their islands in the Pacific. At 2 degrees, they would be uninhabitable. So you're talking about millions of climate refugees there also, and the repercussions of that for the planet. So that's one side of it. But I suppose walking with those people, Ireland had the record of the COP of being like worst in the EU on climate performance. So here I am with, you know, that kind of, yeah, I'm from Ireland and we're really crap at this. And then you have people who have kind of lost everything on the other side of the world. And they would say to me, so what is it going to take in Europe for people to wake up? Because the Philippines are wide awake because they've had so many of these super typhoons and are going to continue to do so. Is it going to take a massive natural disaster for people to wake up? And I was like, I actually don't know, but I do know that we've, even in this small island, have noticed in the past year, like the beast from the east, the massive heat wave that caused the drought in the summer, and, you know, which, for example, reservoirs still haven't recovered from that. And if you talk to farmers, they are most definitely starting to see. So a couple more summers of droughts, maybe that will encourage people to wake up. I'm not sure, but I think because we don't see it, it's not in front of us yet, maybe that is also putting the blinkers on.
I mean, and that's the big tragedy, isn't it? Like, the people who've done most to cause the problem, including ourselves as one of the worst countries in Europe, are the countries that are really experiencing the least. And Europe as well largely hasn't been too badly affected. Whereas, as you say, the Philippines, they're kind of going, let's do something. Yeah. Let's do it quick.
Absolutely. And, you know, I find, you know, so-called developing countries are probably going to leapfrog a lot of the carbon emissions that we have used to develop our economy and so forth. For example, in India, they are building giant solar farms, like the size of Leinster, almost same in China. Now, you know, these countries also have rely a lot on coal and so on, but there are many, many countries on the African continent as well that are powering their communities by solar completely. And so, yeah, the emissions are being caused mostly by the richest countries in the world, and affecting people in the global south who've basically done very little to cause the crisis. So there's a huge injustice there, and that's what we mean by the term climate justice, that we want to right that injustice, that it is a question of justice for those people as well.
And are you hopeful, finally?
Good question. I think it's an exciting time to be involved, because this is our, I think this decade is going to be the turning point, whether it's good or bad. So what excites me at the moment, I think I'm excited and hopeful in the movement that Greta has started in the climate strikes, and in the, there is an awakening, and especially in faith communities there is definitely a spiritual awakening around this. So yeah, I'm hopeful and excited about that, but not complacent, because we all have to keep pushing at this door, because the consequences are so severe. But there, as I say, the solutions are there. What's needed is the political will and the people to push that political will. And so, yeah, more hopeful than pessimistic, but aware that, like, it's a very serious time. But to be alive, I guess, and we all have to stand up and do what we can.